Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. Are relations between the two biggest powers in the world, China and the United States, on an unstoppable collision course? Let's get to the bottom line. Despite their differences, the U.S. and China have gotten by for decades. Up until recently, American manufacturers loved moving their operations to China. On human rights questions like concerns about repression of Muslims in Xinjiang or suppression of rights in Hong Kong, the nations are passionately divided. In Washington, there are fears that China's astounding economic growth and its attainment of technological and scientific parity in many key industries of the future threaten America's lead position in the world. And they see China as working hard to situate itself as the most powerful nation on Earth. And if that's not enough of a hot mess of challenges, a bipartisan group of U.S. senators and House members have now followed on the trip to Taiwan by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who defied both the White House and China in urging her not to take that trip. China sees Taiwan as part of its sovereign territory, but the deal has been that China won't take the island by force, while the U.S. promises not to recognize Taiwan's independence. That ambiguity has kept the region stable for decades. In protest of Pelosi's visit, China has halted numerous bilateral talks and collaboration on everything from climate change to drug trafficking to regional security and military coordination. And President Joe Biden has stalled any action on lifting trade sanctions imposed by his predecessor, Donald Trump, on Chinese imports. But despite the downward spiral, the two nations are really joined at the hip, doing more than $700 billion a year in trade with each other. So what are they? Strategic partners, strategic competitors, or strategic enemies? And what does it mean to you, to me, and to the rest of the world? Joining me today is China's ambassador to the United States, Qin Gang. Prior to this post, he served as the deputy minister of foreign affairs in Beijing. Ambassador, it's great to be with you today and talk to you. And I really want our audience to understand the Chinese dashboard when it comes to Taiwan. We've seen the trip of Speaker, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. You warned her not to go and said there would be consequences. Why does Taiwan matter so significantly to you strategically?
Thank you, Steve, for having me. Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan was reckless and provocative because it upgraded the substantive relations between United States and Taiwan, and it violates the U.S. commitments in the three joint communiques of China and the United States that there's only one China, and the government of the People's Republic of China is the sole legal government representing the whole and the same China, and the United States will not developed official links with Taiwan. And Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, we have heard and we have seen what she did and what he said. It's not an unofficial visit. He said very clearly in her statement upon arrival in Taiwan that her visit is official. And she herself is not a person in the street. She's number three in the U.S. government. And she carries a great political sensitivities. So by going to Taiwan, declaring that the United States sides with the Tsai Ing-wen's authority, put the Taiwan independence on its political agenda in the parties, Democratic Progressive Party's constitution, is a show of the United States emboldening Taiwan independence forces. You know, the consequences are very serious, as we have warned the U.S. side repeatedly. Now, we are dealing with the fallout of her visit.
One of the things that I have been surprised by after her visit was that while President Biden did not ask her not to go, the national security bureaucracy the Pentagon, various national security officials that work for President Biden were very concerned about her visit and thought that it would be a trigger. Were you heartened in any way to see that divide in the government, that there were a lot of people in the U.S. government who did not support her trip?
Well, we only pay attention to the end result. The Congress is a part of a U.S. government, and the Congress is obliged to respect and follow the American foreign policy. In any country, there's only one foreign policy. So you can't say that the executive branch has one and the Congress has another one. And we are dissatisfied with what has happened already. And we don't believe that the executive branch of the United States have done enough to stop her going.
What is China trying to achieve in the world?
So first of all, China is working for delivering a better life to its own people. You know, this is at the centerpiece of the mission of the Communist Party of China and the government of China. So what we are doing is to, you know, make ourselves stronger and prosperous so that we can satisfy our people's desire for a better life. And at the same time, you know, China can have many more to deliver for world peace, security, and common development. And China is a force for peace and stability. But regrettably, my country is being misperceived and miscalculated. Some people see China as a challenge or even a threat, trying to replace United States. This is it's not our intention. So we want to have a stable cooperative relations with United States because we do believe that China and United States have a massive share responsibilities and common interests. You know, we have our challenges at home. I think that the first thing to do for each of us to manage our own affairs well. And a good relationship between China and United States will serve the interests of our two countries and will meet the desire of the international community for peace, security, and for joint efforts to tackle the common challenges the international community is facing. And sadly, the status quo of China-U.S. relations is very worrisome. It's going downhill. This is because, as I mentioned, that China is being misperceived and calculated. And China-U.S. relations now is being driven by fear, not by the common interests and by the common responsibilities of our countries. You know, people forget that, you know, the bilateral trade volume annually between our two countries have exceeded $750 billion. People forget that before COVID, you know, there are 5 million mutual visits between our two countries. And people forget that in China, United States are one of the most important trading partners to each other. And the people forget there are hundreds of thousands of Chinese students, you know, studying in United States. And more American young people, they choose China to study. So I think it's time to bring back common sense, common interest, and common responsibility back to the center stage of U.S.-China relations. And our differences and disagreements cannot justify confrontation.
Well, I've heard you recently use the term threat phobia and using the escalation of rhetoric over Taiwan and the United States as part of that. What do you think is driving American worries and concerns about Chinese behavior from your perspective?
I think there is indeed a fear or China phobia in the United States, and it's spreading.
Is that racism?
Well, maybe you can make a judgment, but I do feel that, you know, in this country, the Asian hate is on the rise, and the Chinese scientists, Chinese students feel more and more unsafe in the country. And our normal interactions, cooperations in various fields are now being affected negatively by fear.
I think a lot of Americans look at what they see in China and Taiwan and Hong Kong, and some of what they see are, say, the zero COVID policy, where many people are locked in their residence for a very long period of times, and we've seen the YouTube videos, et cetera, people and their frustration. Or in Hong Kong, we saw massive protests that were put down, and a lot of Americans, because they believe that that was a democracy movement, or they see Taiwanese that worry about, you know, their future autonomy, and even some of them, as you said, want independence. There's a sort of affinity that many Americans feel for that. And I guess I'm interested, when it comes to triggering this crisis again in the future, what is your response on those things? How can China either respond on those situations to alleviate Americans' concerns that China is trying to squelch autonomy and, you know, basically basic freedoms and human rights, to have a more trusted relationship there? I mean, I'm just sort of interested in why Taiwan is such an exploitable situation that it can lead to a quick escalation like it did. And I think in part of it is because so many Americans basically have empathy for freedom.
Mm-hmm. Well, the question of Taiwan, fundamentally speaking, is not about democracy or freedom. It's about China's national sovereignty and the territorial integrity. It's about the national dignity of Chinese people. The historical fact is that Taiwan has been part of China since ancient times. And in the history, Taiwan was separated from its motherland by the Dutch colonials and the Japanese invaders, but the Chinese people, we worked so hard at a huge cost to get Taiwan back to the motherland. So people need to understand history and need to know the international law. So what is the international law? One China principle.
Kurt Campbell, who is President Biden's coordinator for Indo-Pacific Affairs, he's a longtime Asia hand, has actually said, don't believe the Chinese on this, that peaceful reunification is not the agenda that they are seeking, that they use Nancy Pelosi's trip as a pretext to position itself better and to take advantage of this moment. A fairly strident claim from Kurt Campbell. I'd just be interested in how you see that moment. What were you doing to send the signals that this would be troublesome?
I don't know based on what this American senior official openly said that don't believe China will practice or will work for peaceful reunification. as I mentioned earlier, you know, people on both sides of the Taiwan Strait are compatriots, you know, and we will do our best to achieve peaceful reunification, but we will not renounce the unpeaceful means. This is not targeting at Chinese people in Taiwan. This is to deter a handful of Taiwan independent separatist forces and to deter their foreign intervention so that we can best protect the prospect of peaceful reunification.
Is there any way to get back to a healthier relationship from your perspective?
Firstly, China doesn't believe that decoupling is in the interest of either China or United States. And it will hurt both of us. And it will hurt the whole world, giving, you know, the weight and the influence and responsibilities of China and the U.S. And secondly, we do not want to decouple. You know, we want more exchanges and more cooperation. To get this relationship out of the current difficulties, we need to take some very important principle to heart. That is, you know, this relationship should be built on the principle of mutual respect, mutual trust, peaceful coexistence, and win-win cooperation, as proposed by President Xi.
I remember when then-Vice President Biden helped arrange the Sunnyland Summit with Xi Jinping and Barack Obama. And I was with Vice President Biden in China when he met Xi Jinping the first time. And there seemed to be a very good relationship, a relationship of mutual respect. And Vice President Biden, now President Biden, told me that he respected Xi Jinping and thought that he was a forward thinker. Do you think there's a level of trust still in that relationship and mutual respect, or do you think it has been now spoiled so badly by the events that you've been concerned about?
Well, I'm very concerned about the level of trust between China and the U.S., simply because that China is being seen as a challenge. And simply because that China phobia is widely spread in the U.S. So if you see somebody as a friend or a partner, it's something. But if you see somebody as a threat or a challenge, you know, it's a totally different story. So how to restore trust? We need to back to the very basics. That is to have a fair and objective of China's intention of development and to bear in mind our common interests and the common responsibility, which we believe that the far outweigh our differences and the disagreements. We should not let differences or disagreements in the way of the development of our relations. And our differences and the disagreements should not justify, you know, confrontation and hostilities.
Ambassador, years ago, when then-Premier Hu Jintao was visiting Washington, I was seated next to a guy who was the equivalent of the director of the policy planning staff of your Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So I said, oh, this is a great opportunity. Tell me, what's China's grand strategy in the world? And his response to me, kind of joking, was, How to Keep You Americans Distracted in Small Middle Eastern Countries, which had a ring of truth in it in that era. What is China's grand strategy today?
So China's grand strategy is to safeguard world peace, security, and joining hands with people of all other countries for common development and shared prosperity. And we want to have a peaceful and friendly international environment for us to concentrate on our domestic development, which will deliver better lives for our Chinese people. Nothing more, nothing else. And I'm as ambassador, my role is trying to distract United States from fear of China and from China phobia. And the world is big enough to accommodate China and United States. Let me give you a story. The first Secretary of Treasury is Hamilton.
Mm.
And there's a musical called, Hamilton. And he had a political enemy. That is Alan Burr. At that time, he was the vice president of the United States.
Yes.
And the end result was not happy. The two men,
to say the least,
had a deal.
Yeah.
And at the end of the deal, Vice President Burr lamented that the world is big enough for me and Mr. Hamilton. So let's look at the world today, and let's look at China-U.S. relations. I want to borrow Mr. Burr's remarks that the world is big enough for China and United States. And we don't need to have the tragic incident more than 200 years to repeat itself today.
Well, Ambassador Qin Gang, Chinese Ambassador to the United States, I really appreciate your candor and for you joining us today and talking us through these issues.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So what's the bottom line? Today we talked about the future of U.S.-China relations. My quick bottom line is that the two top global powers will always struggle for dominance. Brinkmanship and rivalry are really baked into this relationship forever. But the cataclysm that would come if the U.S. and China work harder to separate than to cooperate would probably doom us all. So another way must be found to avoid a catastrophic collision. But this week, we're also marking the killing of one of our dearest colleagues, Shireen Abu Akleh, by Israeli forces in Jenin last May. Shireen was a phenomenal journalist, an objective witness to events that she reported on so that all of us would have insights into what's happening. She was killed for doing her job. Analysis has shown that an Israeli bullet ended her life, and yet no one has been held accountable. Impunity is incredibly dangerous, and the death of Shireen is a placeholder for the harassment, the detention, the torture, and sometimes murder of journalists around the world. I hope you will think of her today as we call for authorities to bring her killers the justice that she and we deserve. And that's the bottom line.